the Little Ranch House Studio on Southwood Drive in Lubkin, Texas. It's the Blind Handyman Show. Hello there, neighbors, and welcome to show number 193. This is March 27th, year 2007. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining all design with the blind in mind. Our host for the show, John Shaw. Hi, Donald.
Today, what's happening, man?
I was fooling with the phone. I knew your microphone's turning.
We're on and going.
There he is.
We're on.
Don Patterson's here today.
Don
Pat.
Yes. Oh, I'm here. I was looking for you, Tom. I think you told a big fat fib. You're not really here. You're not really live from the Little Ranch House.
Oh, you're not?
No, you're not.
Oh, I'm not. No, but everybody else is.
Everybody else is,
yes,
sort of.
Everybody else is. My name, by the way, is Tom Houston. But here he is. Here's the guy that's always here, ladies and gentlemen, the creator and the producer of the Blind Handyman Show, Bill Farr.
Wow. Pretty exciting, isn't it? Well, you got the air conditioner on. I don't know why you're not here. Sunshining.
It is sunshining. My yard's pretty well messed up, though.
Oh, what's wrong with your yard?
From last night, it's pretty muddy.
We got a little rain last night. I slept through it. I missed it.
My deck is dry. I'm sitting on the front deck now.
Oh, are you? Talking on your cordless phone, huh?
Yes, sir.
Which you'll have Skype by next week.
Yes, sir. I'll download it and begin using it.
That's a promise. Yeah. All right. Well, it'll be good.
I didn't take my microphone to Houston, did I?
No. Not that I know of. Why?
Well, because if I took my microphone to Houston, I'm going to have to get another mic.
Why?
Because I don't have another one to go with that computer, and I need it for Skype, right?
You don't have a microphone.
I do have a microphone.
Yeah.
If I didn't take it to Houston.
What you're trying to say is,
Houston, it's gone.
If you took it to Houston, it's gone.
If you took it to Houston, you lost it.
Right. I need to look in the cabinet and see if I've got it in there.
Well, it's got to, because you didn't take it to Houston.
I don't believe I did either.
Why would you have?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, when you went with Mr. Microphone here,
I took about 10 microphones. You wouldn't have needed yours, I wouldn't think.
No, I wouldn't have needed it, but sometimes I get a wild hair and I'll throw things in there, you know.
No, I think you'll probably find it in some cabinet there at your house, Tommy.
I know right where it is if it's here. So
I think those guys that, they would have left that microphone, they were interested in the beer. That's what I think.
Oh, those guys?
Those guys.
Ran off with my luggage.
Oh, if it had been in your suitcase, I forgot about that. They would have stolen your... No, because you didn't mention it that day, and you would have said something about it. Oh, my microphone, my $20 microphone.
No, probably didn't carry it.
My $20 microphone was in that suitcase.
Yeah.
Those SOBs stole, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But you didn't, as far as I know, you didn't take it. All right, I'm glad we cleared that up. It's summer's here, and it's about 80 degrees out here. We are going to get supposedly some rain this afternoon, they say, but it's not. I don't think it's going to be too bad.
It rained really good at my house last night, judging from all the standing water I had.
That's what Luann said, but I was fast. Little Phil had taken his Flexeril and gone fast asleep.
Missed it all, did you?
I missed every minute of it. I've been trying to. The doctor said to take these muscle relaxers every night for 10 days and see if I couldn't get my arm to feeling better. So, you always want to do. If you're going to go to the doctor, you might as well do what she says, right?
Especially when muscle relaxers are involved.
Especially, yeah. There's not a lot of point in going to the doctor if you're not going to do what she wants you to do, is there?
Nope.
That's kind of what I felt. Well, it's we're ending Skype week 2. That's all we've talked about. We had Olympus week, and all we talked about was the Olympus recorder.
That's right.
And this is Skype week 2. I hope it'll be over pretty soon. I bought a Skype phone Saturday.
All right.
And it took over my sound card, and all my music, I play music on my computer, was coming through my phone.
Yeah, it's strange. You know,
Skype and Skype phones and Norton antivirus.
Norton antivirus. Have you had virus
problem? They just try to take over your computer. I took everything that says Norton off.
That's good.
Yeah, I hate Norton. But
sometimes you can't.
It's hard to remove.
It's hard. You have to seek and destroy.
Don't you figure they're the guys that invent viruses? They make them up.
Probably.
Yeah, that would be a good plan, I would think.
They can sell their updates and virus programs.
What do I have?
However, that little free one, Don Shaw. what is it, ADG or something like that?
ABG, but they have a nice one you can purchase also. But, yeah, man, that's a great antivirus program.
Mine seems to scan all my email and does a real good job.
Yeah, I like AVG.
Yeah,
they have the anti-spyware and the antivirus.
You can
buy the whole package, and it's great.
AVG.
Screen reader friendly, even.
Is that right? I have McAfee's. Ever have any experience with McAfee's? Ever?
I have never used McAfee.
I had McAfee before the computer crashed.
Yeah.
But now, since I've gotten my computer back and been using AVG, it seems like AVG is doing a lot more work. I mean, it shows itself.
I like its little
scanning bit.
Yeah, I like AVG's its little daily reports. You can go check and see what it did. It's the only one that I've been around that makes sense to me. The others, I have another somebody brand on my other computer that came with the computer. It's about to expire, but it doesn't seem to have any rhyme or reason. You know, it just
AVG as a daily thing. It shows you every day what it's done.
Mm-hmm. You can set it to can pick your own times, but I always set it to check once daily. And
yeah. Oh yeah.
Just to make sure that no one is trying to invade your computer. Right.
That's correct. Yeah.
All right. Well, I just stumbled along with my McAfee's, but you have to buy it for every computer you hook up, and we've got four or five going, so I guess we're supporting those people.
Yeah.
All right. You got email, Houston?
Yes, sir. I sure do.
Let's look at some email, guys.
Is it possible to set a DeWalt sliding miter saw to cut data? I see on the right-hand side of the saw a bolt with a wing nut that may do it. It looks like the bolt could be adjusted to control the height of the saw blade. Just wondering, Keith.
Well, you mean to cut a dado in dado is a wider than just a cut.
Yeah, I mean, and I thought you had to have a special blade. I'm not going to say that it couldn't be done, but I have a suspect that wing nut might apply to something else. There's a clamp thing that's held on by wing nuts, and you can make, but
and that may adjust your fins. I don't know what it does.
I don't know. I've never seen. I had a table saw, obviously, that had the kit. You had to change blades or guides or something, but I don't know about.
I've got a dado blade in my old. The first table saw I bought was a little cheap Sears Craftsman. It wasn't so cheap after I bought the damn stand that goes with it, but it looked cheap to begin with. Well, it was $120 and the stand was $140. I don't remember what the deal was. But anyway, I've got a dado blade that I keep in it all the time, and I've got another table saw also. But I don't know how you could cut a dado with one blade. You know, I mean, what you know, you could. Does he mean just stop before you go all the way through the board and just make a partial?
I think that's what he's talking about. But it was some kind of.
But that's not, you couldn't, what would you, you couldn't slip anything down in there. I mean, you'd have to have an awful thin piece of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Stock to go. Dados are, like if you took a drawer apart and you saw that bottom in a drawer, how it fits in the side in a little slot, that's a dado, for those of you who don't know what one is. And the way it works, there's two blades there, and you can adjust the separation between the two blades. And if you get it just right, you can cut a little slot like you do on a like you'd put a dresser bottom in a dresser.
Well, also, I can't understand why he would want to do it. You'd be limited as to the length. I mean, you're going to, the max on it, unless it's a sliding compound saw, is going to be about 6-inch board.
Yeah, you said it was, didn't you say it was sliding compound miter saw?
But,
yeah.
I'm not sure even at that, cutting on a compound miter saw, on a sliding one, trying to cut a board lengthwise, holding that. In other words, with the skinny part up on the platform and pulling the blade down the length of the board is difficult. I think this is the wrong application for that tool.
I do, too.
I don't believe it was designed.
Now, you really need a table saw to do dados with. Right? So the answer to your question, Keith, is no.
Once again, the blind handyman have triumphed over.
I have a response from Dale Levin.
Over adversity. Go ahead.
And Dale says, don't know specifically about that model, but there certainly are many models these days where the depth of a cut can be fixed. I don't believe, though, that the Arbor is designed to accept the dado cutting set, but you could cut each side then plow out the middle either by repeated passes of the saw shifting the board slightly between passes, or by making a few passes and cleaning out the middle with a chisel or a router plane.
Yes, you could.
When I need only one dado, I commonly cut it this way with my table saw. The main limitation, though, is the width of the cut, probably not more than 12 inches on a miter saw. And that's Dale's.
Yeah. So, in other words, make several cuts and then plow out the middle.
Yeah, but we pretty much covered that.
Yeah.
And actually, believe it or not, because you would have to have a... If you cannot adjust the blade as far as how far your miter saw comes down, and for some reason I've owned two of them and I don't think I've ever seen that adjustment, maybe I just don't know where to look. But that would be almost one thing that you could do easier with a hand miter saw. You know, you cut a board, say, if you got a 2x4 and you want to go a halfway through it, and then you move over a half inch and go halfway through it again, you could control your hand miter saw if you're a blind person.
And then plow out the middle between the two cuts. But that's a, you know, gold.
You'd have to want a dado awfully bad.
Awfully bad. I don't know what you want to do with a dado, but building drawers that way would be pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got what else you got? Dale Evans, by the way, those of you who are Dale Evans fans, Dale is at home.
Yeah.
And saw him Friday night. If you want to, we do... Up at For the People, we gather a little gather there on Friday night at 9 Eastern. A bunch of us go in that, they have a blind handyman room over at For the People. And we get together there on Friday nights. And Dale is usually there. And so if you want to talk to Dale Evans, that would be the place to come. For the People on Friday nights, Eastern, 9 o'clock Eastern.
Okay.
All right.
Here's a guy who says, hi, guys. I just got off the phone with a guy in my neighborhood. He wants to swap me a shop smith with all of the attachments for a race-built automatic transmission. I don't really need or want. I went over to his house and looked it over, and it seems like kind of a cool thing. What the heck do I know about woodworking tools? I like the idea of the bandsaw attachment, the drum sander, the freehand grinding wheel, and there's a whole bunch of very neat stuff I don't even know about. However, being an avowed tool junkie, it looks like something I could learn from. Unless I'm missing something, the idea of a central power unit driving variety of tools kind of appeals to me. I'm actually considering a project that will throw me headlong into the world of woodworking and would like to know if this shopsmith thing might be a good place to start. Regards, Larry.
My brother-in-law's, what would he be? Shelly's father.
Just Shelly's father.
Shelly's dad. That'd probably get it, wouldn't it? Scott, my wife's brother, Scott, his wife's father, has a shopsmith and is an avid woodworker, makes all kind of neat things. I mean, he made a rocking horse for the baby kids. That and I said, how'd you put this together with drywall screws? No, Phil, I used dowels to put it together. So he put glue on dowels. You know, this guy does all kind of woodwork and has a shopsmith and absolutely loves it.
Oh man, that's neat.
Just
my
thinks
little
it's,
brother has one, and he's building like a wooden toy train for his grandchild.
Is that right?
He said he wanted something that he could keep and remember him by.
Yeah.
And he's doing all this in his basement at his house on a shopsmith.
Why didn't he just give him a check for $10,000?
Yeah, he'd remember that one.
He'd remember that.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I've never seen one, actually.
I haven't either.
I don't know how many pieces of equipment that they operate. Also, I guess that if, you know, fair value, if the guy knows what the value of his transmission that he has is, I guess he has one that this guy wants to trade and see what the value of that is.
That guy, in fact, we'll be talking to Larry later today. Larry is our guest today,
okay,
in fact.
Well, and so anyway, if he, fair value, you know, if you wanted to get into it, sounds like a neat way to get into it. I've always had, you remember the Kirby vacuum cleaner? They do everything with slice onions and tomatoes.
Yeah, all kind of things.
So I've always sort of liked tools that did one thing, you know, but I wouldn't be one to turn down, you know. I'd like to see one.
I'd like to see one.
I'd like to, but there are people, well, like Gordon, who just swear by them. I think they're the neatest thing in the world.
Oh yeah,
I think they would be great for small spaces.
They're what, Houston?
I said he thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, for you didn't have much room and you wanted one tool that did a lot of things, that'd be it.
Yeah.
So I'd say we'll advise Larry to go ahead and make that deal, Larry, on our advice.
I'd make that trade. Larry.
And let us know.
Transmission would be out of here.
If you get screwed, don't call us, okay? Yeah. We don't care.
Here's a guy that has some emergency help he needs.
I saw that.
He says he had a friend that spilled some drink over his hot amp.
Yeah.
I disconnected it as fast as I could, and it's upside down on a towel.
Uh-huh.
Should it be okay? If not, then what can I do?
I'm sure there are lots of responses to that. I hope it was off when the drink was spilled in it. If it was on, you're probably out to lunch.
He said that he disconnected it as fast as he could. Now, that doesn't tell you, though, whether it was on or not, whether it was used or not, does it?
No, because I poured a beer in the PA set at some club we were working at. I was being real cute. I always have a, hi, everybody, let me introduce the band, and then we'd all turn around and shake hands with each other.
Yeah,
I thought that was really cute. You know,
remember the beer I got in the accordion? Phil?
Do what?
Remember the beer that was spilt in my accordion? My friend came. Oh, at the Blue Angel? My friend came. I hadn't seen him in all of, we worked together, so it'd probably been 30 minutes. And so I reached out to shake hands with him, and he knocked my beer.
Oh, man.
Off in your stomach sideways.
Yeah, and the thing that'll get you, I think, unless if it was off, still, but there's not, I guess, moving parts. But the thing that'll get you is the sugar that was in the drink.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, it's not so much the liquid itself as the residue thereof.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I've never, that's the only time I've ever spilled a drink anything was that accident at the club. I spilled a beer in a PA set. But other than that, I am really, like, my drink right now is sitting way over behind me. I mean, there's no way.
Yeah.
Well, and let's see. In Texas City, I knocked a Coke off in the cart machines one time, seems like.
Oh, not good.
I think they fired me for that one.
Yeah, that was
one of the times
you
they fired
were the
me.
Guy.
Yeah, I think the number of times they fired me. But if it was off and you turn it upside down and leave it 30 days, it'll probably work. Remember when I fell in the pool a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Had a recorder in my pocket?
Yeah.
I kept it, and I got it to do everything but erase, and I was looking at it the other day looking for phone numbers. It now works perfectly.
That's neat.
It now works perfectly. It's laying there by my chair right now. It now works.
It's finally absolutely dried out after a dip.
It finally dried completely out, and it
amazing.
Absolutely works perfectly. I'm sure there were a lot of answers to this from Houston, weren't there?
Well, there were a lot of things I didn't print.
Okay. Are there any, print any of them?
No. No, I did not print a response.
Without that help?
No. I figured we could handle that one.
You figured that's one we could probably.
So now, are you screening the emails?
I think you had some. I think last week you were on the wrong list, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I seemed like I was last week.
I
thought I better get back to the basics here.
Yeah, you had. We may have actually answered, dispensed some useful advice today.
Did you write these yourself?
I'm fixing to give you one on extension cords.
All right, go ahead.
I've always assumed that soldering a wire onto a connector gives better conductivity than any crimping job.
No.
If this is so, then why do the male connectors for 120-volt cords come in crimp style? Don't that crimp one style? What about the ones for a 20-amp supply?
Oh, the best connection is a screw connection every time. Our crimp connection's fine. I use things called Scotch locks and wire nuts, and when you take something apart that's got a motor in it, you're going to find that those wires were not soldered together. They were put together wire nuts, and a wire nut makes as good a connection as anything.
That's what I thought everybody was doing these days, is wire nuts.
Wire nuts or these Scotch locks, like, of course, you don't run voltage through them. They used it for audio wires.
Yeah, and just in a breaker, you undo a screw and push the wire under it and screw the screw down on.
And then push the breaker back in the box, and bingo, you're... Soldering wires is not the only way to join two wires together.
That's for sure.
By a long shot. How do we do there, Houston? What do you think?
We nailed those puppies today.
I think we nailed them, huh?
We nailed them. 4 for 4.
All right. Listen, try to come next week.
We're going to do our best.
If you don't mind, next week.
I've got my chair in tip-top shape now.
What was the final diagnosis on the truck?
On the truck, nothing.
Huh?
He kept it for 3-4 days, drove it himself.
Yep.
And then called me and said, Tom, I swear I can't find a thing wrong with that truck. And my son-in-law drove it up there for me. I followed him.
And he said there wasn't anything wrong with it.
He said, if I didn't know you better, I would say you were crazy. So, and he drove it back, and not a miss, not anything.
Have you driven it anywhere?
I have, and it's doing fine.
I can't find a thing.
And to show you the confidence his mechanic had in his own decision, he told Tom, "You drive it, and if you break down somewhere, call me, and I'll come and get you."
That's exactly what he said.
And so, what a guy!
No kidding.
What a guy!
That's right. I put his number in my wallet, and if I break down, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Well, but something happened that day when we were going across the river. I mean, something transpired that day. That truck would not start.
Well, yeah, that was when he replaced the filter.
The fuel filter.
He replaced the filter on that.
Okay, so we know what that was.
Yeah. Remember going down your driveway that day, I finally got it cranked and backed it back into your house and got your truck.
That's true.
But since then, you know, he couldn't find nothing wrong with it.
Hadn't had any problem at all.
No, sir.
Let me be darned. All right, sir, we're going to let you go, and we'll check you next week. I'll talk to you for then, all right?
Okay, guys.
Thanks, Tommy.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. All right, shall we take a little break?
It's time.
Paul, bring the guest up. Let's do that. I'm Phil Parr, along with Don Patterson and Don Shaw, and we're doing a show called The Blind Handyman. Hang on.
Of the blind, there is something you can do. You'll find a screen reader friendly site and an online petition waiting for you at www.moneyforall.info. That's www.moneyforall.info. Come be a part of history with the American Council of the Blind. www.moneyforall.info.
Well, through a great effort of ours, we've returned to the exciting Blind Handyman show. Let's see if this will work. We're using Skype again this month. Larry, how are you, sir?
Good, sir. How are you doing?
Couldn't be better. Any better, I wouldn't know how to act. Where are you physically right now? What town do you live in?
I'm located about 125 miles north of Las Vegas, Nevada, and in the town too tough to die called St. George, Utah.
All right.
St. George, Utah. Now, is it dry and hot out there like it is in Vegas?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yes, it is.
Same sort of weather. So I've been to Vegas several times, and you think it gets hot in Texas. Vegas isn't doof.
Oh, yeah. Really hot.
Oh, really hot. Too hot. Anyway, what's your level of vision?
I'm sorry?
What is your level of vision?
I'm totally blind.
Totally blind. Well, me too. Me too. So we ought to get along just fine. And you haven't always been totally blind. You lost your eyes as an adult or what?
Negative. I lost my sight as a result of bilateral retinal blastoma. The pros told my parents that if they didn't get all of the cancer, that I would not make it to age 4.
Oh, man.
Whoa.
That's not good at all, is it?
Yeah, needless to say, my folks didn't get too fired up about a college program.
If you weren't going to make it to age 4, there wasn't much point, was it? But you beat the odds and made it, didn't you? And we're glad.
Absolutely.
We're happy about it, and I bet you are, too, just to be honest.
Yeah, I'm having a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Keep waking up on
How old are you
What
now,
is your
Larry?
Age, sir?
I just turned 60 the 8th of March.
60? Oh, right. Well, right, you're the same age. I'm 66.
Yeah.
And Don is, how old are you, Don? 60?
64.
He's 64. And we've got a boy with us, a young child with us, Don.
Yeah.
Don Shaw here. How old are you, Shaw?
I'll be turning the double nickel this summer.
You'll be 55
yep.
this summer.
Well, guys, as long as we keep waking up on the green side of the grass, it's got to be good, right?
There you go.
As long as we don't take that dirt nap. That's all.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all I worry about. Well, your passion, has your passion always been automobiles or what?
I actually worked as an automotive service professional for many years with Porsche of America.
Really?
Yeah.
And you did this as a blind person?
As a blind person, that is correct.
How would one go about, how did you get trained to do that job?
Actually, my training actually came from Bavarian Motor Works, or which you all might know as BMW.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I started my apprenticeship with them. The fact that my family owned a number of BMW dealerships helped in the beginning.
Yeah, that'd do it.
Yeah. And then I went ahead, I completed their apprenticeship program, and went on to go to work for Porsche, and I've got a little time with Mercedes-Benz,
uh-huh.
and actually ran an independent shop for several years.
Larry, did you do your training here in the States?
Yes. It was a traditional in-house dealership-based apprenticeship program.
Okay, but was this program designed? Who determined, or maybe it was your own ingenuity? Who determined that a blind person could do what you were
what
being
you do,
trained
yeah.
for?
No, I don't think there's anybody out there that told me I couldn't. I think was probably more to the point.
Okay. Oh, yeah?
And what exactly was your main calling? What did you do mostly?
Oh, goodness. Unfortunately, I happen to be really fast at engines, engine assembly.
Right.
So I spent more time than I liked in the engine room. Was able to spend later life as I got more proficient and was able to spend a fair amount of time doing tune-up and fuel injection, which I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you manage reading or using some of the diagnostic equipment, or did you have to?
Well, yeah, there was, obviously I had to grab somebody and ask them to read a scope pattern for me if we're using an oscilloscope. But for the most part, in those days, it was pretty mechanical, okay? A lot of it was done with compression testers. A lot of it was done with cylinder leak-down gauges. All that stuff I was able to take right off the Snap-on tool truck and modify for my own use.
Mm-hmm. Wow, how neat.
Man, this is a first. I mean, for, I don't know any other blind person who's, we know a guy who's climbed Mount Everest, but I don't know anybody that's worked for dealerships as an auto mechanic. That's kind of an unusual occupation.
Yeah. Put yourself in the position of the customer. You get a brand new $60,000 sports car. It's in for a stereo install, and you got a blind guy cutting holes in a $60,000 sports car.
That's scary.
Yeah, that would. They probably kept you out of sight a lot. Pardon the pun.
Did you? Let me ask you this. You mentioned something, and just curious, and there would be no fault in it from my standpoint. But did you? Were you able to get started because of your family ties? Do you think they would have trained had you not had anybody in the business, would you have been able to do this?
You know what? I think, honestly, I think the first year would have been a real bear otherwise, because I think once they realized that, yeah, I could do the work and that I could do it competitively, there was no problem.
Right. Yeah. But getting that foot in the door.
Yeah, getting your foot in the door would
exactly
be the
right.
problem.
Yep. Right.
Now, when you said you worked in the engine room, then were y'all assembling new cars here in the States?
No.
Or?
No, we would do, if a guy came in and he needed it, need an engine freshened up, or if we had one that went away under warranty or whatever.
I got you.
That was primarily.
You would hoist the old engine out and put the new one in.
I would hoist the old one out. Well, actually, I would take the old one out. I'd take it in, disassemble it, put it through the cleaning process, take it over to the machine shop, and I say take it over. It was all matters rolling it around on a big cart in those days. We were all.
Yeah.
Now they don't have any of this, okay? The dealerships are now nothing more than R&R shops, remove and replace shops. But go through the machining process, take it back to my station, reassemble it, and reinstall it.
So you say they don't repair engines anymore, they just replace them.
That's right, yeah.
As does everything else in society, they don't.
Oh, if you, if you've got a minor problem, if you've got a, you know, if you've got a blown head gasket, or if you've got, if it's a routine timing belt maintenance or something like that, they'll do that. But if you have a, if you have a catastrophic engine failure, you get a new one.
They just put you in there. It's just easier, I guess, they figured out to do that than it is to try to.
Yeah, pay someone to.
Well, they'd have to. What do you figure they'd have? They don't want to spend the money for the diagnostic equipment anymore, or what?
No, it's just the labor is so terribly expensive. They give you, say, for example, they give you 10 hours to R&R an engine, remove and replace an engine, okay? And they give you another 20 to 25 hours on top of that R&R to overhaul the assembly. You've got $35 or $80 an hour.
Yeah.
Plus the, you know, the price of the components.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you can flash the guy in the parts department and time to order you a crate.
So, Larry, you worked for Porsche back in their air-cooled engine days, right?
Yeah. And part of the I was there for the first part of the transition.
When did they do 98, 90s? When was their first?
Oh, no, 88.
Liquid cooled?
Yeah, 87.
Okay.
Was the 911 GTR3 car was the first liquid cooled.
My wife loves the 80s Porsches. The 911, she would like to have an 83 or 84, and I finally talked her out of it, so now she has a Land Rover Discovery. But
you're still sleeping inside.
Yeah.
She that's about it. You know, it's a huge car.
So. Yeah, she loves her.
She does.
She's a mud hog. You know, they go to these rallies and.
Oh yeah.
Well, I admire you, sir. You traversed where blind people fear to tread.
Yeah.
You know, which is always good. That's what we look for.
Excellent.
We look for blind people who do the unusual, who don't do the end. Now, there's nothing wrong with tuning pianos all the rest of your life, except that isn't what you wanted to do, was it? No.
Precisely.
Huh?
Exactly.
All right. What we wanted to talk about kind of was a lot of people think of blind people. Well, a blind guy wouldn't have a car. Well, I've got two or three cars. Shaw's have got two or three, and the Pats have got two or three today.
Yeah, lots of list members have their own vehicles or access to vehicles.
Yeah. Lots of blind people, even like the justices, they don't drive. Neither, both of them are totally blind, but they have a car because they find it easier to furnish the car and find a driver than to try to find the driver and the car.
That's right.
And so a lot of blind people are that way. So what we want to talk about is things you would do to your car to sort of get it ready for this massive hot summer of 07 we're going to have.
Okay.
All right. Why don't you go ahead? You take over.
I sort of put together, and this is the days of winter and summer maintenance aren't probably as pronounced or as pervasive as they once were. Okay. Now it's more a matter of regularly scheduled maintenance. We don't have. You know, we don't do the thing anymore where we put coolant in an engine for the winter and then put clean water in it for summer, because nowadays coolant does much more than prevent you from cracking an engine block. It actually now allows you to raise the boiling temperature of water, particularly when you put a radiator cap on it. Poor old radiators got a lot of work to do nowadays. Before, all it had to do was kind of just cool the motor, and that was it.
Yeah.
Now it's got a transmission cooler associated with it for an automatic transmission. Many instances... it impacts the operation of the automobile's air conditioning system. So it's got a lot of work to do, and we have to take care of it. And we do that by annually changing the coolant in it, or every 30, whatever your manufacturer's recommendation is.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
So there's probably time for me to do
it. It's time for me to do the same thing. I've got my car 2 years. We haven't changed it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Now, there's a thing out there called lifetime antifreeze, okay? And I'm convinced that the guy that invented lifetime antifreeze is out to sell engine assemblies.
because...
You can't convince me that you can take a fluid and heat it and cool it from 300-plus degrees to ambient on a regular basis and have it maintain its integrity. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen.
That makes sense.
Yep.
And we can probably apply somewhat the same witness to motor oil also. I get in these huge beverage-based discussions with folks about motor oil. Well, guys, I'll tell you what. I've seen 1,000 engines fail because of a lack of motor oil. I've never yet seen an engine fail because of motor oil.
Well, now, you know, of course, advice is cheap, and so am I. But do you listen to Car Talk?
No, I do not.
You do not. Why do you not? Do you not think they're supposed to give good advice or what?
I think they're probably okay. It's just not on my list of things to do.
It's just not something you do. I listen religiously on Saturdays, and they say that changing the oil every 3,000 miles is certainly a waste of time and waste of money, that you don't need to change it that often.
Like you, like you said, most all of us, you know, opinions are like body parts, and most all of us have one, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But you believe in changing it how often? Every 5,000 miles or so?
3 to 5. I would, unless you're driving in perfect conditions, and I mean perfect conditions, you could stretch it out to 5. But if you're a stop and go driver, if you're towing, if you're dealing with an excessively high heat envelope for any reason, then get it out at 3 grand.
Yeah.
We've always done over 3,000 and always had clean, you know, engines that always, if it, you know, it's never been the problem, is the engine holding up.
Even with our good friends in the Middle East getting gas at near $3 a gallon, motor oil and maintenance is still the cheapest thing you'll ever do to your automobile.
Exactly. We have an 04 Honda CRV that has 110,000 miles on it. My wife drives maybe 200 miles a day, and we change the oil every 3,000 miles.
There you go. I rest my case. That Honda's a poster child.
Yeah, it is. We're hoping it'll do another 110.
Should. Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, really. Okay, we've got... coolant, motor oil, automatic transmission. Let's talk just a second about transmission fluid in general, automatic or standard, either one.
Okay.
It's an item that needs to come out about every 30,000 miles. Now, here it's a little bit more important to stick with the dealer's recommendation. If the dealer says he wants a synthetic blend with certain additives in it, then that's probably the direction you want to go. The reason for this being that in many cases, particularly with front-wheel drive and all-wheel drive vehicles, that's a common sump for both the differential and the transmission. There's the ring and pinion gear running the same in the same body of fluid that the transmission does.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah. Get it out of there as per dealer recommendation. 30,000. Again, it depends on your driving habit. If you're driving in the perfect environment and You can stretch toward the top end, but I don't recommend it, nor do I necessarily believe in it.
So around 30,000, think you should go ahead and change the fluids.
Yeah.
Or have them changed.
Yeah. Some of the newer cars have finally, and I don't know why they didn't do this 30 years ago, but some of the newer cars, Saturn for one comes to mind, has actually incorporated a spin-on filter on their transaxle now, so that you don't have to pull the pan and take that nasty little flat square filter out and run the risk of dropping, you know, little oh darn clips out of the transmission.
Yeah. Oh darn clips.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that probably wasn't the word you used, but...
I'm not sure. I'm still not sure of our audience.
Oh, well, that's well, we have these... we built this house. We had these little damn it roots. And that's, you know, you'd be walking along and you, damn it! You know, you'd stuff your toe on one. Anyway, we got your point.
Okay.
All right.
Other manufacturers, I'm thinking, I'm hoping it's gone that way, because I think it's a really neat idea.
It is.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And, again, you know, go with the manufacturer's recommendation. Not all differentials. We'll talk about differentials here for just a second. A differential, for those of you who may not be familiar with them, that is what takes the rotating torque and converts it, takes the linear torque and translates it into motion, into forward motion. It makes, basically what it does is, using a pinion gear meshed with a ring gear, it makes the torque run around corners, so it'll drive the tires. Now, this has its own set of problems with respect to lubrication.
Okay.
Has anybody heard of a limited slip rear end, a positive track rear end, a short track, any of those?
I've heard of them for racing stuff.
Yeah.
They've got them in trucks that they put them in pickups that with towing packages. Most all your front-wheel drive cars now use a semi-lock type differential. They're very pervasive in the market now. All of your all-wheel drive cars, like the Durangos and the Blazers and the SUVs that are all-wheel drive, use some form of that. They are very specific with the lubrication that has to go on that, because these things, in many cases, use a clutch pack in them to lock up the slack side wheel or the non-driving wheel. And if you put the wrong lubrication in, you'll glaze those clutches, and guess what? You just spent $1,800 getting it repaired.
Yeah, that could be very expensive, couldn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So once again, it's one of those things you want to check with your manufacturer, look at your owner's manual, and they'll give you an idea of what needs to go there. Is that a phone call?
That's a phone call, but don't worry about it. We're not going to answer it. I'm going to push a button and let them listen to the radio show a minute, and they'll figure out what we're doing. Go ahead.
All right. I think one of the other things that I wanted to talk about that hardly ever gets addressed is brake fluid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Brake fluid is one of those products that gets heated to extremely high temperatures, cooled back down to ambient, and it also has the ability to desiccate moisture out of the air. And as you guys know, water doesn't compress particularly well, so if you get a few parts per million water in a brake system, it's going to rust, it's going to corrode, it's not going to work particularly well.
So you should actually change your brake fluid?
That is correct.
Ah, that's a new one on me. I never thought about that.
This is kind of a throwback to the old days, back in the days of the Castrol, Girling, Kelsey Hayes, Earhart, disc brakes.
Yeah.
And I've just always believed in it because I've pulled a lot of calipers apart and a lot of wheel cylinders apart. They've been really rusty and cruddy and nasty on the inside. And you know what? If you do that brake fluid every couple of years, you're not going to have that.
You don't have to worry about that.
Those rubber parts are going to last a whole lot longer.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And any questions with respect to fluids?
I had one that I was going to ask you, and we moved on quick. Talked about synthetic or lifelong antifreeze. How are you on the synthetic oil? A lot of the little fast lubrication places try to push that. Wonder what you thought.
Again, there's some people now. Some of the later generation motors, the General Motors 5.3 liter V8, the Dodge Hemi, the Ford V10, and the Chrysler V10, all use a roller can, a roller rocker system in them, and it requires they require synthetic oil.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I hate to sound like that dealership broken record, but
yeah.
You know if they suggest it, I'd probably go with it. You know, after all, whether they put the ashtrays or not, they did build the darn thing, so they probably have a pretty good idea of, you know, what belongs in it.
Yeah, yeah, you know, right, and that's odd. I wonder how many, you know, we go to a tire company here in Lufkin, in our town, and they do our oil, and they rotate your tires. If you buy your tires from them, they will rotate them free for every 5,000 miles or 3,000 miles. Every time we get the oil changed, they rotate our tires for free. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And would they know that those new cars that you mentioned...
That's something that you'd have to query them about.
Boy, I mean, now because if you put regular motor oil in, then you say it's doomsday, right? I mean,
not necessarily doomsday, but it's certainly not going to work as efficiently as it should.
Aye, okay.
So,
I got a question talking about fluids, and if we talk about greasing things and oil, how about the boots on front wheel drive vehicles?
You've been reading my mail. This is my next thing on my list.
Yeah.
Actually, there's more than just this, and those are called constant velocity joints that you're talking about on the axles.
Yeah.
And it's become more and more pervasive because of the angles they need to work that, and the universal joints just don't do the trick anymore. Universal joints don't transfer the torque, because effectively back when independent rear suspension first came out, I think it hit the U.S. market in 1963 on the Stingray, Corvette Stingray. They used universal joints. Well, they were noisy, they were choppy, they were coming apart on a regular basis, and so the industry had to come up with something that would hold a little more torque, be a lot smoother, and last longer, and that was the genesis of the constant velocity joint. And it does a nice job. Its limitations are, number one, it's very expensive to replace.
I've heard that it is.
Yeah, and number two, they must have a clean environment. That's why you're asking about the boots on them.
Yep.
If your service technician is worth his Miller High Life, he will check those boots each and every time he's got your car up in the air.
Yeah, because if you get one crack in that boot, I've heard that you can really get a lot of dirt and grit and crap in there.
And let's face it, dirt, grit, and crap mixed with grease makes a great lapping compound.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
We have those boots other places also. We have them on ball joints. We have them on tie rod ends. We have them on steering. If you've got a rack and pinion car, it has rack and pinion steering on. They're on both ends of the main rack of that rack and pinion car. We have them over cables. If you have like a parking brake cable where the live part of the cable slides through the housing, there's going to be a little dust boot there at the end of the cable to keep road grime out.
Yeah.
And, again, this is one of the, especially if you live in a country where they put salt on the roads or if you live in an extremely dusty environment, you really want to watch these boots because they can really mess up your afternoon if they go bad and you miss them.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, that could be an expensive.
Yeah, it can be. And in the same vein as those boots, I did want to talk just a minute about CV joints. They're down there underneath the car. They're stashed up behind the wheel. Nobody thinks about them until they stop working. And they're actually fairly maintenance-free as far as, you know, lubing them periodically. There was a time when they gave you a procedure to grease them, but I think that's pretty much gone by the wayside now over the years.
They just replace them?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
How do you know if you've got one going bad before it strands you?
Good question.
Okay. What you do is you find a parking lot, and either you or your driver, whoever, put the car into a slow right or left-hand turn, into a slow circle. If you feel a tapping in the steering wheel coming back to you through the steering wheel, the chances are that's a flat spot on a ball in one of the CV joints, and it's then time to get a pure technician, get it up in the air, and find out what's going on with it.
Ah, that's good info. Good info to know.
Yeah.
How about, can you touch on belts and hoses?
Yeah, right quick, because we're getting kind of low on time. Why don't you do that right quick, Larry?
All right, we've got two flavors of belts, V-belts and serpentine belts. Serpentine belts seem to be taking over from V-belts. V-belts run on a series of shivs or pulleys. They're what you found in the hood of your car forever. Serpentine belts are relatively new. A serpentine belt is a flat belt. It runs on flat drive surfaces or kind of a serrated drive surface.
That's what we've got in the caravan.
Yeah, that's what most cars have those now, don't they?
They do, yes. They do. And they're a lot quieter. They're a lot more trouble-free. You're not out there with a bar of soap trying to keep them from squealing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
familiar.
I told you that was a while. You take a serpentine belt from a blind guy's perspective, probably the best way for you to tell whether it's going bad, because mostly it's visual. It's a checking pattern that goes on. But what I've found is that you can take and drag your fingernail perpendicular across the surface of the belt on the top of it, and mm-hmm. if it feels really rough and like it's flaking apart on you, have your service tech take a look at it.
Good info.
It might be time.
Yeah, now you do this with the car stopped. With the engine.
Car stopped, engine off.
Engine off.
Keys in your pocket.
And so no one can possibly start the car. And you take your finger down, just rake it across the top, and it should feel smooth.
Yeah, it should, yes.
Good information. Yeah, that's something I need to check on.
Well, Larry, obviously you are as passionate about cars as I am about radio.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you understand cars. You know them from A to Z. You're probably one of those who can still hear a car running and tell you what make or model it is.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
you really can't anymore, can you?
No. Too many race cars, too much rock and roll music.
There was a time when you could.
Yeah, well, right.
I tell you, we might we want to kind of think toss this around every once in a while. We might have you on every once in a while to talk about cars, get some car questions, and do that. We'll be back in touch. You certainly, I admire your passion and your interest. You've learned your subject well.
I have a question.
All right, Don has one quick
question.
Yeah,
one more question. With all the cars you've seen over the years, what's your favorite car? Or what do you think?
Passion for passion, it would have to be the 69 Hemi Cuda.
Okay. and value.
And for grocery getter, I kind of like that little Dodge Dakota pickup, extended cab four door Dodge Dakota pickup.
Okay,
that'd be a nice thing to have.
The Ram, you know, they're all.
You aren't a believer in Toyotas and foreign cars as being better than three American car makers.
Well, I don't want to get into a political discussion.
we don't mind that. We cuss everybody. We don't nobody. We don't have any friends.
That's right.
We take no prisoners here. Listen,
yeah,
Larry.
I don't, I'm not a big fan of the Japanese cars. I started out, I learned them because I had to, because there were so many of them out there.
Yeah.
And my standard joke has always been that the Japanese manufacturers use Phillips head screws, where the Germans use Allen head bolts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you
that's
got something there.
That's probably why the Japanese cars last almost as long and are a third the price, you know?
Yeah.
Listen, sir, we're going to go, and we thank you, and this will be on this weekend on ACB Radio, and you can get a link to it off the Blind Like Me or Blind Handyman
list.
We'll post those to the list. Larry, we appreciate you, sir, and you carry on. Have a good day.
All right, you too.
All right, sir, thank you much. All right, we're going to take a little break and come back and figure out something to talk about. That guy, that boy knows his cars.
Oh, yeah.
No question about that. We'll be right back. Hang on. Lucky that we are. We got vocals both times, didn't we?
Yeah. Well,
I'm supposed to say, now here's Don Patterson.
That's what you're supposed to say.
That's what I'm supposed to say. Well, I said it.
All right. Here we are. Okay. The never-ending, soon-to-be-ending saga.
You keep saying it's over, and it never is.
Well, I tell you, it was a big job. If I had it to do over again, I don't think I'd do it over again.
Do it over.
But, country song, if I had it to do all over again, I'd do it all over you.
I don't think I would do it again if I had to do it over again. Yeah. Wrapping up the plumbing, you know, the problem with having a project is even home builders will tell you, it's not the initial plans, it's the changes in the plans. Yeah. And so we sort of added a sink, a laboratory in the shower thing as an afterthought. It was really not so much that you didn't need one. I didn't think you did if you had an outside sink. And really, you know, it's basically a bathroom facility. And, of course, one needs a place to wash their hands and all that. But the sink inside the room was an afterthought. And so when I built the little hot water compartment, we had it built out of the synthetic marble, it sounds expensive marble, but it's not. But it's nice in lieu of tile.
Yeah.
And so the sink is prefabbed. The plumbing in there is kind of tight, but actually, and then I had to run these outside drain lines to back into the main. So that's what I'm about. I have three more fittings to put on, and I'm through with that little project. Plumbing's done, wiring's done. And then up under my little compartment, your tailpiece, they call it, that fits on your stopper assembly that goes down in the drain of a sink, is six inches long. And with the hot water heater in there, I may or may not have an inch to spare. But I can kind of move the hot water heater to one side, actually. There's room for it. And then if I can get my little P-trap in there. In other words, it's not so much that it can't be done, it's just going to be confining space.
Right.
And then hooking, I'll need the shortest little, these flexible metal connectors to your hot water heater. Yep. They come in two or three different lengths. I mean, you can get real long ones, and then I don't know what a standard length is. But I actually may have to cut some plastic pipe and move it up to make it taller to get them to fit. But that's the last problem in the project is hooking up the hot water heater. And then
this is 07.
No, it will be. We are going to use it for the annual family reunion on May the 7th or whatever the weekend, the first weekend in May.
That's May the 7th, son.
And so anyway, we will be up and running. My biggest problem actually is so much not getting this finished. I mean, I've got plenty of time to get this. It's getting the swimming pool has been very difficult this year. I didn't lose it as far as the chemistry and the water so much. It's just the dogs. have swam,
yeah, and
swam,
they keep it filthy dirty
with dirt. And then I had a load of sand, and so the dogs love to get in the sand and then jump in the pool.
Yeah, track in all the dirt.
And so, but actually, and then we had an infestation of caterpillars. Now I don't know what they grow up to be when they cease to be these furry worms. Are they butterflies? Because if they are, I'm going to have millions of butterflies. But they're in my pool.
And, what?
This furry worm. They're dead, obviously. They drown, but I just have a swimming pool that's loaded with these little furry
worms. Now, I've had ants in the pool, but I've never had furry worms.
Furry caterpillar worms.
That would be discouraging.
Not good.
Well, and I reached down to pull up one of the baskets of the ant and was stung. Somebody told me they'll sting you. I don't know if it was a bee that got, because bees, I've seen bees in the pool. And but the plumbing is coming, three more little connections, 3 L's, about 10 feet of pipe.
If you are out there listening to us on Blind Handyman and you're considering building a swimming pool,
don't.
All three of us would say don't. And we've all three pools, big, nice in-ground pools. I would fill mine up in a heartbeat if you let me.
And I've had mine a lot longer, less time than they have. It just doesn't take me as long to make a decision.
You're already sick of it.
That's right. I'm sick of it. Because even salt water or no, maintenance free or no, there's no such animal as maintenance free. And it just takes time and it's just
for 4 or 5 days a year, they're the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah,
it'd be like owning a beach house, except worse.
Except that's all you. I think I swam 4 or 5 times last year.
Yeah. Well, if you count the time I fell in it. You know, I just hate it, but they're, you know, those kids of Scots are going to love it.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about that.
Whole tribe of grandkids.
Nothing's too good for Scots kids. Boy, I'll tell you that, buddy.
That's right.
Well, we got it, and ours is almost clear. It was looked better the other day, but by next week, she keeps, she'll think about it a while, and then she'll put chlorine in, and then she'll forget about it and go, have those pool guys been by? Well, no, dear, you didn't tell them to come. Well, I don't know what's wrong with them. I don't know why they haven't come by. The pool looks like, well, you know,
it's
I'm sorry.
Hell.
I quit. I had a heart attack. I'm out of the pool maintenance business.
I was gonna net some of my worms out of my pool, and I reached down to get my little net, and I found that Puppy had found the net first, and so it's got a big hole in it.
Oh, man.
That's the second one he's destroyed.
So it's off to Kenco, except that Kenco closed.
That's right. It's off to Duran Pools or Lowe's.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well.
Don't do it. If you have a choice, don't do it.
Buy that junky $300 above ground pool, use it a few years, and then throw it in the trash.
And you'll never hear swimming pool again.
You'll be much better off, you know. Remember the time you bought that when you took it down, you had water up to your ankles?
It collapsed. It almost drowned you.
Should have learned a lesson from that.
You should have. Until you bought my house, you just had to have it, didn't you?
Yeah. Thought so, anyway.
This is 193 on the 15th of May, Tuesday the 15th of May. I think it's the 15th of May, Tuesday. We should be doing show 200.
All right.
I don't know what we'll do.
Have red lunch. Letter day for your calendar.
A lot of guests on. You'll want to write that down, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Don Shaw.
Yep.
Thank you, Don Pat.
Oh, yeah. Enjoy.
We'll see you next week. I'm Phil Parsons, and the Blind Man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.